Welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And we're going to play a little fantasy draft-type game in the later half of this episode. But right now, we're going to kick things off with the voice of Friday 10. And now, one of the voices of the Saturday USA Network A10 games, Mike Corey. Mike, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, hey, what's up, guys? Good to be here. How you been?
Well, we're enjoying... I don't know, Matt, is this the wackiest start to A10 play that we've had since we've started this pod?
I feel like we say that about every year, but this does seem like an unusual season for sure.
So, Mike, you're doing, I believe you're now at 5 total games since we're 3 weeks into conference play. Just starting to finally get to see these teams in person live and instead of on film. What's your biggest takeaway on this season so far?
Yeah, I mean, it really is interesting. I mean, you guys said it. I didn't think Dayton, there's no surprise there. We knew they were going to be good. I mean, this team's on fire. I mean, they've won, 13 in a row. I mean, just playing really good basketball. The other thing it could remind me of is the 2020 year where they had, Obi Toppin and, of course, and get to see what happened there at 29-2. But they closed the year on like a 20-game win streak before the season was canceled. They're similar to that, to be honest with you, with the pro, with Holmes and all that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. Obviously, Richmond is a huge surprise. No one was talking about them, and they're playing really well. Loyola, Chicago, same deal. I know they just lost the other night. And then I think VCU is picking it up now that they've got their guys back with Bama Seal and Bairstow. And they just kind of hurt themselves early on in the non-conference. Nothing they can do, but I think they're going to be right there in the mix, at the end of the season. So I'm looking at VCU kind of being up there, challenging Dayton at this point.
And I think VCU is a great team to be looking at too, because we still have two upcoming Dayton versus VCU Friday night showcase right. Matchups that you'll be on the call for at this point in the season with VCU playing so well the last week or two. Do you think they're the biggest challenger to Dayton, or could that be somebody else at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of looking at the schedule, or the teams here, as we're talking. It's like, I mean, everybody else has had some, George Washington's had a nice year. I mean, they had their strength of schedule, obviously, is not that great. But, I mean, they've done well. Again, Rhode Island's better. George Mason's kind of a wild card. I put, George Mason, St. Joe's, UMass, as I look through it, geez, they could be really, really good, but, they've had a couple of tough ones here and there. I'm surprised at Fordham, but I know they've lost some dudes. St. Bonaventure, I feel like they should be able to pick it up a little bit more now, too. And then the Davidson, St. Louis, Duquesne, LaSalle, not really going to be challenging anybody, I don't think, at this point this year. But, yeah, I would say VCU, that whole mix has got to probably be one of the toughest teams. When we go to Loyola Chicago, we'll be out there for a Friday night game versus Dayton. We were there last year, and that crowd was phenomenal. I don't think they had a chance in that game. They didn't have quite the season they're having now, but you never know. I don't think Dayton's invincible, so we'll see.
So two teams right now that could go really either way. St. Joe's loses 3 straight to start, then has now won 3 straight, including – somehow back-to-back on offensive rebounds in the final 5 seconds. I don't know when the last time that's happened is, although UMass has now lost that way in 2 of their last 3 games. St. Bonaventure, they've won just 1 of their last 5. Your next game, you got the 2 of them facing off. Do you feel like one of those two teams can still pick up steam and become a challenger at this point? Or are they in trouble?
No, I know St. Joe's is trying, but you're right. It's been very close the last couple games. I mean, I was there for one of them. It's just nuts. And then St. Bonaventure, they are like either they're on or they're off. I mean, it's as simple as that. Like in the games they've won, I was looking it up, they scored 80, 89, 89, 90, 90, 94, 99. Those are the points that they scored when they've won games. Like out of their... what do they got? 11 wins, 7 out of the 11 wins. It's unbelievable. And then they go and they score 50 or 54 or 62 or whatever. So it's like, I'm telling you, if they're on, they're on. So look out, because they're a darn good team. But this could be a big game this Friday night. I mean, is it St. Bonnie that kind of gets somewhat back on track? and St. Joe's still hanging in there, or St. Joe's going to propel themselves up to the top where I think, you know, they were kind of expected in that upper third this year.
Yeah. And as a broadcaster, you obviously got to be objective, but it just makes the game easier when you got some entertaining players and some entertaining guys. Like, I'm sure Jay Burnham had an easier job calling UMass St. Joe's last night than the guys working Duquesne St. Bonaventure did. But who are the guys right now that are, that you're just excited to be able to watch, to have them on the call?
Yeah. I mean, you got to start with Holmes just because he's that good. I mean, the guy, you know, credit him for coming back into school for his junior year, refining his game. He's dribbling the ball up the court now. He's knocking down three balls. I mean, he didn't do that last year. You know what I mean? That's what it takes. Like, you know, and he's going to be a pro. And, you know, I was looking at the draft board. I'm thinking, I don't know. Like, I would got to feel late first round or something at this point. But, geez, think about if he even came back for another year. I mean, he would be like a lottery pick or something. I'm sure he's going to probably go. There's no doubt. But he's a fun guy to watch. And then I do like the VCU guys there, and then Bama Seal is just a fun player. I got a chance to talk to him. He's really got a lot of plans on and off the court for, you know, after graduation and whenever basketball is done. I mean, he's a very interesting story. He's been to four different schools. You know, he's an exciting player, knocks down three balls and stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many different guys. I mean, even with St. Joe's, you know, they've got a young group of freshmen that are talented. I mean, there's like four guys right there that are really doing a great job. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, when I see every one of these teams, there's a couple guys here and there, but those are just some to mention, you know, right off the top.
Yeah, I think in particular, I mean, the first two guys you mentioned, Ron Holmes and Joe Bamisiel, were probably the MVPs of the two Friday night games so far. But what teams maybe, I mean, obviously you've already called a lot of A-10 games this season, but are there any that you have coming up on the schedule in the next few weeks that you maybe haven't gotten to see in person that you're most eagerly awaiting?
This is what happens every year. And I know there's like internet and, you know, Twitter and all this. Oh, what's the deal? It's like, look at, you know, it's all about matchups. It's all about time slots, availability. I was talking to members of the conference and also with us at ESPN and, you know, NBC. I mean, it all depends, right? I mean, they try to come up with some of the matchups that they think are going to be the best. You can't ever foresee anything happening. So it's like, to answer question, it's like, I would have liked to see Richmond. I mean, I didn't think they were going to be, you know, 5-0 or whatever. Obviously, we're going to get Loyola Chicago. We've got Dayton on. We've got VCU. George Washington, again, they're a fun team. I mean, they're well coached. They're a good team to watch. I didn't know about Rhode Island, but they're overachieving, I believe, you know, and Archie Miller, you knew they were going to get it turned around. Mason, again, yeah, new coach of Tony Skin. It's hard to figure out there, but I mean, again, they're 14-5. They're playing pretty darn good. I would have liked probably catch them at some point. I don't think I have them. St. Joe's got a few times. It's great. UMass could do them a couple times. They're way better. That's where I went to school. I mean, I know you talk about being impartial, and I am, even when I call UMass games. But obviously, I like to see them succeed and get better. And I like Frank Martin. So I'm glad, you know, they're doing a little bit better for sure. Fordham, we're going to Rose Hill for Friday night, which I think is going to be fun. I know they weren't where they were supposed to be, I think, or projected this year. Bonnie's, we've got a few times. St. Louis couple. I'm not going to see Davidson really too much, I don't think, this year. And then Duquesne I've done a few times, and I haven't probably not going to see LaSalle. So I do got to get around most of the league. I would say at least probably 11 to 12 of the 15 that I'll have on the air at some point during the year.
So A-10 or otherwise, have you ever had a good or just outright awful interaction with another fan base? Maybe fans recognize you, they got mad that maybe they felt like you were a little biased on a game that they lost, and trying to exchange words with you.
No, you know what? Not really, to be honest with you. I don't get a lot of, you know, hate mail, Twitter comments or whatever. I mean, once in a while, there'll be somebody who's, if it's a team, it's just losing or not doing well in the game, they'll be like, you know, all they're doing is talking about whatever. It's like, yeah, well, you know, no offense, but it's, if they're down by 20 or 30, it's kind of hard. You know, sometimes we have like stories and things we want to discuss about a team, and we want to get them out there just because we want to give equal opportunity, to be honest, with both teams. It's really a showcase about being as positive, I think, as you can to promote both schools. I mean, that's what we're here for. I'm not a negative guy. I don't like to be negative. I rarely criticize on the air, to be honest with you. I rarely criticize the officials. You know, I think a lot of people do that. Oh, it's a horrible call. Like, I go in and talk to the officials before every single broadcast I do. I've went to officiating camps. I learn the rules. I try to get better. We want to be on the same page. And their goal is just to get the call right. And until you have any idea what it goes through trying to officiate a game or behind the scenes of these things, it's really hard to criticize and be critical. In the same way when I do the games, you know, like, how do you know what they've been doing all week, or, you know, watching film and this and that? And they're college student athletes, you know, so I try not to criticize. So no, I don't get a ton of those. I will get the customary same one guy every time I do a Dayton game where he's like, it's pronounced Day-T-O-N. I'm like, I'm not saying Dayton or whatever, or Dayton. Like, it's probably just the way I say it. Dayton. I don't know any other way to do it. I mean, I'm sorry. And I love them. They're great. Their fan base is awesome. I have nothing against any of those people there. But every time I do a game, I get that one guy telling me I'm not saying the name right. I'm like, okay, there's not much I can do. I mean, and I'm pretty on top of pronunciation, so I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Well, as a couple of UD alums, we'd like to apologize for that guy, but
yeah, I mean, that's you guys. I mean, am I not saying it right? Dayton?
I think it's close enough.
Happy. Say it for me. This really bothers me.
Now it's going to get in my head. I mean, it's the Dayton Flyers.
Dayton Flyers.
That seems pretty close. We're just happy that you're calling the Dayton games on ESPN, because as long as they're getting those primetime games, that means they must be playing pretty well. Dayton. So I'll just take that.
Yeah.
It sounds about the same as you two say it.
The Dayton Flyers.
Yeah, I'm not hearing a difference between the two, so I'd say it's right.
Matt, do it again for me.
I've been criticized for my pronunciation of many things before, though.
Matt.
Yeah, Dayton?
Dayton?
That's. I think we got it.
Okay.
I think it's even better than before, too. For the next broadcast, you're going to be 100% ready to go.
I always just say Flyers now when I'm on the air.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, that's good to hear,
though.
Legitimate
native, too, so.
That's it. I got some accent, whatever. Yeah. I grew up in Vermont. Yep. I'm a New England guy, whatever. But again, I love the team. They're awesome. I have them every year, as rightfully so. And the fan base is incredible. As you guys know, and Grant, I mean, yeah. I love it. So, I mean, I mean, you know, that means a lot. And I'll say this about a couple other schools too. Like, it was like, St. Bonaventure. I know it's a hard place to get to. Nobody seems to ever want to go there. It's snowing, it's cold, whatever. I love it. I actually legitimately love it. I got to know the people up there a lot. Coach Schmidt is actually a friend of mine now. I've been up there in the summers. I played in charity golf tournaments with them over the last couple of years. The people up there are so kind. They're nice. They're dedicated, diehard fans. They go to every single game and they care. They're not rich out of craziness. Like, it's like a local, cool community that it's like, that's the thing you do. So Dayton does that. They have 13,000, whatever, 500. St. Bonaventure got to 4,500, whatever. They're really just as passionate. And I do really like going up there because basketball means a lot to them, you know?
So, as you're noting out here, some remote destinations in this conference, and now that you're doing the ESPN USA split, and I don't think they're chartering a private jet for the USA Network games, you're doing some late Friday driving through the middle of nowhere for a fair amount of these. But on the flip side, is there a drive that's actually enjoyable? Is there some sort of sight that you like seeing on the A-10 roads?
So let's see. I'm going to go through the list. I'll fly to Dayton. I'll fly to Richmond nowadays, even though I live in South Jersey. I'm in Marlton, New Jersey, about 25 minutes outside of Philadelphia. So I used to drive to Richmond, but if I don't have to do that now, I'm not doing that because it's like four. What other traffic always gets me there? Chicago, we're flying to VCU, same deal. GW, Wood Drive, I need to. Rhode Island, I used to go up there a ton. Again, very small campus. They do a great job with that, you know, atmosphere too. When they're on, and that's a fun place to be at. Mason, same deal. St. Joe's right across the river, so that's about a half hour for me. Great atmosphere this past week. UMass, I mean, I love it. I mean, it's where I went to school. I'd love to see more people there, and I know the students are off right now and all that jazz, but that's always been a point of contention for me, is getting that place packed. And I know it's a hard place to, you know, sometimes be at, coach at, recruit at, play at, whatever, but it's not. I mean, I don't want to go back 25 years to the Final Four, but Coach Cal, I mean, you know, you got to go knocking on students' doors and delivering pizzas and putting out promotions and really getting these people fired up about it, because it's an unbelievable place when it's rocking. I'm telling you, it really is. Fordham's been great. Bonnie, like I said, Davidson, I've been there a bunch of times. St. Louis is awesome. Love that atmosphere. I mean, I'm not really driving into any of these places, but I mean, that town, that city, when they're playing well, 10,000 people at that arena, it's awesome. And Duquesne was great, you know, hanging out in Pitt, their crowd was good. And LaSalle, I know they're working on the, you know, some renovations and stuff, which they desperately need to their environment. I think, you know, hopefully that'll help a little bit there. But I really have made some crazy drives before. I've gone from Dayton to Richmond. That's not fun. That's like 8 hours. Doing the same Bonaventure to Duquesne a couple times. I'm doing the over and back. That's only about 3 hours, 15 minutes. So that's not too bad. Richmond, you can get to George Mason, and St. Joe's is less than 4 hours. Philadelphia, UMass isn't too far from me here, you know, Fordham, New York area. So, I mean, no, there's not kind of a long answer to your question, but I like a lot of the cities that these teams are in. There's a lot of fun stuff to do, and the people are really good.
Yeah, and well, looking at your schedule too, the rest of the season, you're pretty much calling multiple games every weekend the rest of the season. Has there ever been a crazy example of after a Friday game, you're heading somewhere Saturday? And as we are very well familiar with, a lot of these A-10 cities aren't in the greatest winter climates. Has there ever been a time where you were worried, like, I might not even make it to this next game, or just unforeseen circumstances that could mess that up?
You know, I was just thinking about that today. Like, you know, last year was even crazier, because I think, to be honest with you, I had a Friday, Saturday, Sunday game, like 6 consecutive weekends. I mean, it was just, and then we got to like conference championship time. And, you know, one weekend it was the ESPN was just, I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and they knew it. They were like, yeah, well, here's the games. And two were in Florida. One was a drive, you know, and then we had a conference championship game. I had to fly in like the morning of, you know, and it's like, I don't like doing that. But it was starting to get better weather. It wasn't really horrible. We haven't had crazy winters, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know global warming or what the heck is going on here, but like, we only had like one storm this past year already here in Jersey, and like then one a little bit the other weekend, but it really hasn't been too bad. And I'll just drive, you know, Matt and Ty. I mean, if I have a problem, I'm like, no, hopping in the rental car. There's always a backup plan, plan B, plan C. Never going to let that happen, you know, knock on wood. Or I wouldn't do it. I mean, I don't do it to be, I mean, I just love doing the games. It's the conference. I work a lot of the Atlantic 10 and the American. I'm going to be doing a couple conference championship games this year, and the NIT. So I'm excited about that. So it's just about basketball. And, you know, when you get the same teams and leagues, it makes it a little bit easier. So I don't sacrifice prep or anything like that, you know?
So you're doing a lot of games with great Dr. John Giannini, who we've had on this pod a few times. And I'm sure that you two have gotten a pretty nice rapport together. So if you're in the rental car together, anything like that, who's picking the music? Who's behind the wheel?
Well, we just had this last week. What were we doing? We were going from St. Bonaventure. We got to St. Bonaventure, did the game, and then the weather. The flight was canceled. What was I doing? I was just going home. I think it was a Saturday night game. I was just going home. I was going to fly home first thing Sunday out of Buffalo. They moved the Bills game. Remember, they moved the Bills game. There was the weather, and I was supposed to fly Sunday. They canceled the flight, obviously. We're like, well, forget this. And then they didn't have another flight till like Monday. I'm like, well, Monday. I'm not getting home Monday. I got to get back. And the same with Dr. John. I'm like, dude, like, we should just drive. And he's like, yep, good call. So we finished the St. Bonaventure game, got the rental car. I was with Sean Carney from the Atlantic 10 too as well. Sean's great. He drove me from Pittsburgh to St. Bonnie from the Friday to the Saturday game. And then on our way out, we dropped off John's rental car, and he's like, I'll drive, no big deal. So he did it. He drove us like 4.5 hours home from like Elmira, New York, or wherever the heck we were. We got home at like 12:30 in the morning. But we just had great basketball conversations, and, you know, just great stuff in general. Cause I mean, he's an awesome guy. I mean, you know, it's like, it's so interesting because I've done these games for so long, and then you have coaches, right? They're like, oh, that's coach. And the relationship's different, right? You're interviewing them, you know, they're high strung, they're trying to win the games. It's like, and then you know, and it wasn't bad. I only did a few of his games, you know, when he was coaching. But then I was like, once he came off and he was on the air and he's like, he really wants to learn and get better. We go out to dinner every year because he lives right down the road from me here in Jersey. We have great time talking on and off the air. On the air, he's great. He's growing. He's doing a great job. And it's just like, he's a fun guy to be with and learn from and his experiences. And it's like, wow, I never even have known this, you know, if this wasn't the case. And it's like, he's just a good friend. And I'll say the same thing about Matt McCall, who is awesome. I mean, you know, yeah. Had a tough time up there at UMass, and I understand why. I mean, there's a lot of circumstances, but him, he came off the coaching last year on the air. He was unbelievable. I was like, he was doing it for like 15 years. Like, again, he was like calling me, how do we do? He wants to get better, learning, growing, super cool guy, hanging out with him off the air. I'm like, this guy's great, you know, but it's like, I didn't develop that relationship till, you know, after. Sometimes I do. I have with Coach Schmidt, you know, he's been awesome. Like I said, been up to St. Bonaventure in the summertime last couple of summers. So, but again, I credit all these people because they're really, really good people. And it's like, until you get them out of sometimes that high strung environment, you don't get to really know that person. And it was pretty enlightening and, I like it. So it's cool.
So I want to close it out. I'm glad you mentioned a whole bunch of coaches there. One coach who I think a lot of people tend to have different opinions on what his personality is probably like, but when you're getting ready for a UMass game and you got to call up Frank Martin and talk to him about what's going on, what are those interactions like?
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to him a few times, you know, a couple times last year, a couple times before games. I mean, he just kind of tells it how it is. I mean, he's like, you know, he doesn't hold back. I mean, I think that's good. I think he's just kind of still trying to figure it out, feel it out there. But I feel like he's got some of his guys in now, and it's like he's going to run a tight ship. He's going to run a, you know, a solid program. His track record is good. We all know that. Went to the Final Four before. I mean, so, but yeah, I think I would like to spend a little bit more time with him, to be honest with you, because I think his experiences and stuff that I'd learn a lot from, and I have already a little bit. But yeah, he's a good guy. I mean, and he's a good coach. But I haven't had as much time with him, to be honest with you, as some of the others. Chris Mooney too, I want to throw him in there. I think, you know, I spent a lot of time with Mooney. I mean, just fans, you know, if they ever have a problem down there in Richmond, like, they better chill out because they just won the title a couple of years ago. He knows how to recruit people there. He's an unbelievable person on and off the court. It's not easy to get into school there and play well and be competitive, and everybody thinks you got to win a championship every year. There's 15 teams, my friends, and over the last 7 contested tournaments in the A-10, there's been a different conference champion. So anybody could be bitching about their school. Like, what the heck? Like, it's not easy. Like, so I just don't, you know, I subscribe down the other side where I'm just like, hey, I get it. It's hard. Everybody's doing the best they can. I'm just not real critical, to be honest with you, of people and coaches.
Yeah, and by the time people are hearing this, Richmond may be at 6-0 tied for first or 5-1. We're a few minutes from tip off of their Wednesday night game right now, but
right.
Another good season for the Spiders. Wildly, no Richmond VCU games on Friday night this year, but we still have Mike Corey on Friday night. Mike, we know you're the voice of the A-10. Everyone can hear you Friday nights on ESPN. Most Saturdays on USA. Anywhere else if people are looking for you?
Yeah, that's at Sundays. I'm usually back on the American. Also a couple of midweek games there as well. Mike Corey Sports is the site. That's where I usually post, you know, what I'm doing or where I'm going. But yeah, you could just do that on Twitter as well, Facebook. But yeah, thanks so much, guys. Always good to talk to you, and love talking about the league and college basketball. So we'll do it again.
Yeah, Mike, thank you for joining us. And the next time everyone hears you, the voice of Dallin Cuff will be right next to you from St. Joe's and St. Bonaventure. All right, another thank you to Mike Corey for joining us. Matt, we didn't do any sort of fantasy draft like we did the last two seasons. I think we had brought on the fans of some moribund teams and giving them something to root for this year, but I mean, this season, there's really no team that's truly been a depressing waste all year long. You certainly could say Duquesne was for 2.5 weeks here, but they also gave their fans a great November, and there's still at least enough hope there that they won't be a pillow fight team. Everyone's had something to care about here all year. So
are we just ignoring the whole burner account fiasco? That was like 2 weeks ago.
They beat St. Joe's. That was fun. That night, I genuinely think half the St. Louis fan base is now just having fun with how much they hate Travis Ford now.
But see, that's the thing. That seems the type of game that half the St. Louis fans secretly wanted them to lose. I don't know. I would never do that, but some people might.
It's the college version of rooting for tanking.
Yeah, the benefit's not really as good in college basketball, though. But no, you're right. I mean, there hasn't been a truly dreadful team at any point. Certainly some haven't reached expectations, but everybody's had at least one thing to be happy about at some point or another.
One thing to not be happy about is when they sneak random Wednesday games onto the NBC Sports app, but that's a complaint of circumstance and when we're recording this. Apparently the Richmond game is on there tonight. So fun fact that is irrelevant to everyone who is now hearing this after that game ended, but let's get it back
still,
on track.
Still better than the Peacock, though. I will maintain that.
Yeah, well, you're not paying for the NBC Sports app, so certainly a win right there. But we will carry it on to this little game that we're going to play. It's a draft, but we split it into six different categories, three choices for each. We're going to take turns picking first. The other one will pick the second, and then we'll kind of just leave one be. And it's a whole different trio. We have four different trios of players, three different duos, and three trios themselves. This sounds really confusing. It'll make more sense once we start talking about it, but just a whole bunch of questions that essentially need answered as we try to figure out who's good in this league, who is going to challenge Dayton at the top, who are the double bye teams going to be. The six different categories are star center, lead guard, perimeter trio, stud power forward, a role guy who could break out in March, and the rookie duos. Matt, where do you want to start us off?
So if I start us off, do I get the first pick?
Yep.
Okay. I don't know. These are all close, but there's one I think is the easiest answer. So I'll go with rookie duos. And I guess we'll say the choices are St. Joe's, GW, or UMass. I mean, it seems like either Darren Buchanan or Garrett Johnson wins Rookie of the Week every week. And GW's just gotten so much mileage out of their rookies, probably more than any team in the conference. So I'll go with them for my first pick.
That would have been mine as well. And it's funny because St. Joe's wasn't even a duo 2 weeks ago until Chris DeSondico finally got healthy. But I think at that point, X Brown, to me, was probably the best rookie in the conference. And Garrett Johnson's just kind of kept doing what he's doing. But now Darren Buchanan started the year as a post presence, one of the best rebounders in the league, a good defender on a team without many of them. He's scoring almost 20 points a game in conference play. As we sit here on Wednesday night before they play Richmond, he is fourth in the conference, although somehow not even first on his own team in scoring. And he's shown a diversity to his game that I didn't see coming in November.
Yeah, I mean, he's been awesome. I would say at this point, probably the rookie of the year, with St. Joe's season not going as we had thought maybe a few weeks ago. Xavier Brown's still a great player, but I just think their all numbers really stand out for Buchanan.
So for the second choice, and I think we're kind of doing this like a fantasy draft, trying to predict where this is going to go from here on out. And so for me right now, it might be UMass as the answer for the second pick, but I'm going to take St. Joe's. Like we just talked about, Xavier Brown, I think, is one of the best go-to scorers in this entire league already. Just not something that he gets a chance to show off too much in the game because of all of the perimeter talent around him. But oh my God, the Chris DeSondico hype, which just seemed so ridiculously overblown last year, it's starting to look like it might be attainable. And it was that Duquesne game where he was just punishing it's a Duquesne team that struggled to defend the rim in conference play, but it is a big and physical Duquesne team nonetheless. 21 points, 12 rebounds. As Sandico left absolutely no doubts that he was the best big man on the court in that game. And I don't expect him to gain any consistency anytime soon. But Dr. John on the broadcast compared him to, he asked, is he going to be the A-10's version of Shaq or the A-10's version of Joel Embiid? And before that game, before that performance, that level of praise sounded kind of nuts. Clearly not even one of the four best centers in the league, but he's going to do it once every few nights where he's going to look like a dominant, dominant center like that. He did it against Duquesne. I think we'll see it three or four more times this year.
Yeah, we'll just see as he works back from his injury if he can get any more consistency, because that is his only game over 13 points this year, and he followed that up with just 5 against UMass. So the talent is definitely there, and if he can just harness that into consistent performances every game, then all of a sudden that just makes St. Joe's a way more dangerous team.
Yeah, so just a quick aside on UMass, who we passed on. That's actually shifted in the last few weeks. I think everyone coming out of non-con would have said Robert Davis in that group after his big scoring performance, I think, against West Virginia. Now it's clearly Jalen Curry, who started off really slow, had one hot performance in the non-con, and has now worked his way right into the Rookie of the Year discussion himself. And I'll give a quick aside. I've done this multiple times this year. Just a shout out to Jaden Jingay. Just a grit guy who, if you are not watching UMass, you do not realize how awesome he is. And it might be a 6-man Rookie of the Year race at the moment. I don't think Jingay is going to have a chance to win that award, but it's the 5 we've talked about. And then Miles Rubin, who continues to play well at Loyola.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, I'll give you the second pick here.
All right, I'm going to the lead guard. And we had a discussion pretty similar to this one off the air, I think like a weekend ago, as Jordan King was really just picking it up a notch. And you got 3 great guards right now who are going to be battling for 2, or depending on what happens with the forwards, maybe even they'll all just get a first-team all-conference spot. But Jordan King, James Bishop, Eric Reynolds. My first pick, I'll take Eric Reynolds. And I don't even have a stat backup for it. He's not putting up the numbers that the other two are. But in that last 11 minutes last night against UMass, I would have loved to be in that arena to see the body language, to see what the look in his eye was. But that was just a pure 11 minutes he decided they were not losing that effing game. That was incredible. I think that was the most impressive stretch he's had of his entire career. Where even though I think he missed 2 layups in that stretch, but he was just getting to the rim every single time he decided to move that way. And I know James Bishop and Jordan King are great volume scorers, and they're both actually better assist men than Reynolds. But I just think when it's the biggest moment, if it's a tie game in the A-10 final with an automatic bid on the line, last night reminded us you want Eric Reynolds to take that shot.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, even after I raised the question, I think last week. And just all year, like even when St. Joe's is disappointed, it was never really because of Reynolds. I think it would be easy to just point to him as their best player. Like, why are they off to a bad start in the conference? But, I mean, he had 27 in the disappointing second half against St. Louis, or 27 for the game, rather, and then 26 against Loyola in that close loss. So he's still pulled his weight pretty much every game this year, and I don't think the Hawks' bad start is a reflection of him. This is tough, though. I think for Jordan King and James Bishop, you can really go either way. I feel like what you said about Reynolds, though, against UMass, you could say a lot of the same things about Jordan King at the end of the Davidson game. When that went to overtime, he just kind of took over. So I think I'm going to go with him just for how as a new player on the roster, he's led Richmond with them having such a complicated offense. And, you know, last year it didn't work out quite as well when the Spiders were inexperienced, but he's been a steady hand to that, putting up the huge numbers. So I really think him and Reynolds are still kind of neck and neck this year. Bishop just feels half a tick behind, where GW is, I just said at the last point, they've gotten a ton out of their rookies this year, and Bishop hasn't had to carry them quite as much as we expected.
At the end of that Davidson game, I'd say basically the last 3 minutes of crunch time and all of overtime, it really just looked like nine guys on the court were just trying to get their cardio, and Jordan King was trying to get buckets.
Yeah, I mean, Davidson, that game, they don't have a guy that can match up with that can answer the bell every time Jordan King makes a basket. And that's just, most teams don't in the A-10. That's such a big advantage for the Spiders.
Yeah, and we even saw him, he struggled in the Duquesne game against Kareem Rozier, who's kind of the one other just bulldoggy small point guard to go against him. But he still played pretty well defensively in that game, and that's something that gets lost with another guy we'll talk about in a little bit, Neil Quinn. Two offensive-minded players leading this Richmond team who are both turned out to be solid defenders. And the fact that they're not sieves on that end is a big reason why Richmond's defense is actually what's carrying them right now, which is not something you normally say of a Chris Mooney team.
No, not something that we really said last year at all, but yeah, it's one of the best in the conference. All right, speaking of defense, because I think this plays a big part, best perimeter trio between Dayton Loyola and George Mason. We've talked a little bit about how their defense has stepped up in conference play. I think I'll go with Dayton here. And maybe that just feels like the easy answer with how much success the Flyers are having, but they've started just, they get a lot of steady performances out of the three starting guards, Bennett, Elvis, and Cheeks. In particular, Javon Bennett has really picked up his offense. I think after a rough game against St. Louis, he's 7-for-10 on threes over the last two games. And then Enoch Cheeks, kind of like, I would almost say the better, more experienced version of Jaden Jingay, who you already talked about, like not putting up the huge stats, but someone who at 6'3" can guard pretty much anybody and feels like the ultimate glue guy. So we already know what Toby Elvis can do, but I feel like all three of those guys like have very different skill sets that play off each other well. And it makes it easier when you have Daron Holmes on your side, but I don't think his dominance should get in the way of how good Dayton's guards have been for a lot of the season.
I would have even let you sub in one of the great three-point shooters in this game of college basketball and Kobe Brandt for one of the starters. But yeah, I think the biggest point that gets lost is the one with Cheeks, who not quite this level of defender as the two gentlemen who wore number three before him. Kind of wearing a combination number of that, but he's their version of Kyle Davis and Trey Landers, kind of a cross between the two. He's a little closer to Kyle Davis in size and in positional matchup, but he has the Trey Landers bulldog in him, and something that I think has gone unnoticed, just like with Jingay this year. Also, I had it on mute. Sadly, I had to have it on mute. I would have loved to hear Cale Beers, but did he give Javon Bennett a pow out of respect after the third backbreaking three in the second half?
No, the only pow for Dayton was from the Twitter account after the Flyers won. But no, yeah, Javon Bennett, it kind of just felt like as big of a trap game as you could have. Like, I just want to say, for as ugly as that game felt, you should never take a 10-point win in Tom Gold Arena for granted. But yeah, Bennett just felt like he wasn't going to let Dayton lose that game. And that's something I don't think we could say even 3 weeks ago about him. He's really taken over as an outside shooter.
They were collapsing in that game in a way that we haven't seen since like the Houston game. And then for 2 minutes, Javon Bennett basically just gave the team a kick in the butt. That it really, once he hit those threes, that game was over.
Yeah.
All right. So it's a tough one here, but I'm going to take Loyola. the group of Norris, Dawson, and Watson, who we've been praising over the last few episodes. The Ramblers sitting at 5-2 in conference play here. Braden Norris, who I think remains an unknown to most of the people watching this conference, but he's sitting a tenth of an assist per game behind Grant Huffman for the assist lead on the season. Des Watson, who was always an all-around excellent player at Davidson, but has now become a, dare I say, good shooter. I think I called him a shaky shooter last episode, but he just continues to play better and better with the ball in his hands. A potential all-conference guy in Jaden Dawson right now. And I do want to point out here, Des Watson now up to 40.5% from three. Unthinkable after last year that at the place of shooting gurus, Davidson, North Carolina, he couldn't figure it out, but he has gotten it going with the Ramblers. This is as much a praise of those three as the fact that I feel like Mason struggling these last few games here is because their perimeter trio has not delivered offensively. And we've kind of gotten to see what's real and what's fake with the Patriots here. That interior defense is absolutely real. Keyshawn Hall, who I think comes up later in this, is a stud. But that Polite, Maddox, Billups trio on some nights can go icy cold in a way that it almost kind of makes it impossible for them to beat a good team if they're not getting at least something scoring-wise from Polite or Maddox.
If we had this question at the end of the non-conference, I think it would pretty clearly be Mason over Loyola, but you're right, just the last
would have been Mason
few
over
weeks of
Dayton at that point.
Probably right, yeah.
But Bennett's just played so much better in the last few weeks.
I think the other aspect I just wanted to bring up with Loyola, and a lot of this has to do with their interior also, but kind of like Richmond, I don't think people realize this is almost a top 50 defense, and that's where a lot of their success has been in the A-10 the last couple weeks.
Yeah, they're back to the Loyola roots. They're starting to play like a Moser team again, and I think we got to give them a shout-out because we didn't give them nearly as much crap as most people last season, but we certainly did a little bit. We gave him some crap for his rotations in the non-con. Drew Valentine's starting to do a really, really good job with this team this year.
It's been impressive. I certainly didn't think they would be sitting at 5-2 as we record this. And I mean, they've been close. They could have been 6-1 or 7-0, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to think, like, did anyone pick Loyola to get a double bye at any point this season? And then possibly write that pick off in November?
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm going that far, but they're right
they're
there
certainly
right now.
In the mix.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to take it to what I personally think is the funnest one here. The role guy who could swing a game in March. Three players on good teams who at any point could just get scalding hot and show up in, God, an A-10 semifinal, maybe even on Sunday. Kobe Brea, Jason Nelson, and Darius Maddox. And man, this is close. And I nearly went Jason Nelson here. He was incredible against St. Louis. He's just so much better than the player we saw in Richmond last year. Just it's a Des Watson-esque thing. But Kobe Brea is one of the best dead eyes in all of college basketball. He's in a slump right now, and he's still shooting 48.5% from deep. And just on this team, where they're somewhat living and dying by the three, although they've just been kind of mediocre there in conference play. And when they get to the toughest games of the season, especially as we talk a potential NCAA tournament game against better big men who are going to cause Deron Holmes some extra trouble. In the end, when it's the final moments, Kobe Brea is the one guy that I trust to always come through on an open shot for that team. And when it's going down for him, all of a sudden you blink your eyes and he's just 5 for 6 shooting.
Yeah, I think for Brea, I'd be interested to see, like, and maybe we will see it next year when he has to take more shots, because he's just done a great job of being so selective, and he doesn't really force anything this year, which is why he's shooting around 50%, and he's never really, I mean, it feels like he hasn't had a terrible game where he's gone 0 for 6 or anything like that. So, yeah, he definitely feels like a threat, even the games where he only makes 2 or 3 of them. Defenses always just have to pay a lot of attention to him, which doesn't mean nothing. I would say between the other two guys, it's tough. I think Maddox is pretty clearly the better player, but also Nelson has had those big moments where we know he can just get red hot in a hurry. I think I'd still have to go with Maddox, though, just as, I mean, really, in conference play, he's only had the one really tough game against VCU where not a single Patriot made a 3, but you can pretty much count on him for a couple every night. And even with Mason not playing the best offensively the last couple weeks, I think just his experience, he's a former 50% shooter in a season at Virginia Tech. I mean, that's not the type of guy I would take lightly in a close game.
Yeah, if this was an overall, I think Maddox is the third guy. But if it's a get hot for one game, you're right. Because he also just can get colder than the other two in any given situation. And a quick stat here, Kobe Brea has failed to make a 3 just twice this year. Both 0 for 2 performances. He did so against the best defense in all of college basketball, the Houston Cougars. And he did so against one of the worst 3-point defenses in all of college basketball, the LaSalle Explorers.
All right, to be fair, he had one waved off by a moving screen against LaSalle. It went in, though, so I think that should mean a little bit. Okay, we have two more. Star center, Chad Venning, Neil Quinn, or Josh Cohen. This is tough. I feel like this one...
This one keeps changing, too.
Yeah, I would have easily said Chad Venning a couple weeks ago, but I mean, teams have started shutting him down, and St. Bonaventure, as we talked about earlier, like, they've had a couple really tough games the last couple weeks, and it kind of just feels like if you can slow down Venning, it's not that hard to defend the Bonnies. It's tough. I think I'm going to have to go with Neil Quinn. It seems like he's the most like versatile out of all these guys and has been a huge part of Richmond's success overall. But between him and Cohen right now, at least the way the two of those guys are playing, I don't know. I don't have a strong argument either way.
So it's a weird one because it feels like Quinn has had the biggest impact, just the way that Richmond's offense moves when he's out there. He's 11.5 points and 4.8 rebounds a game in conference play. That's just not that good. And yet I still think he would have been my pick if I went first as well.
Yeah, I mean, the stats don't surprise me. Like, just because Jordan King's scoring so many of their points, like, Bigelow gets a ton of rebounds on that team, so it's easy for Neil Quinn to get lost there, I guess. But just like his assist to turnover ratios as a center is pretty wild. And we should expect that from Richmond centers, or at least the good ones they've had over the years. But yeah, I mean, he just fits in so perfectly with what they're trying to do and feel like he just makes a bigger impact than what you see in the box scores.
Well, and when you catch him in person too, and you just see the extra movement that they have, and this is no criticism to Mike Walls, but when Quinn's out of the game and it's running through Walls, like, things are just moving slower. The geometry of the court is completely different. Quinn gets the ball so deep and can operate from so deep that it creates a whole bunch more space for King and Hunt and Jai Bailey. And I think everyone is just kind of benefiting from it around him.
Yeah, no, I think so. Although Josh Cohen really isn't entirely different. I mean, we've talked about this a couple times, but he surprised me as a passer. I think that's helped UMass out a ton. Just having bigs who can handle the ball this year has been a huge benefit to them. I don't know, UMass too, just in general, they are sitting at 3-4, but they've had three games. All of their wins have been convincing, and three of their losses have come by a combined 6 points. And Cohen has been a huge part of that. Like, even when they were missing Cross for a couple games, he had to step up in a big way. And just his consistent production coming up from a much worse conference, like, his scoring hasn't really dropped off at all. So from a pure numbers standpoint, he's probably the second pick. But I don't know. I feel like I think Quinn just has the slight edge with how well Richmond's playing.
So we did this going into conference play. Cohen would have been clearly beneath the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Stats wise, he has significantly outplayed the other two in this first third of A-10 play. But projecting going forward, I still just want Chad Benning. Just the dominant force for an offense that is just kind of dead without him. One of the biggest reasons he's still getting to the free throw line a ton, shooting 71% from there, and that essentially kind of became the tiebreaker for me, although Cohen's up to 68, which is outrageous, because he was in the mid-50s in December. I think I just trust Venning a little bit more from that perspective, and as Cross starts to recover from his dual tooth and ankle injuries, I still think Venning's just a lot more important.
Yeah.
Although all of a sudden, Cohen might be on the better team. And I don't think we would have even said that a week ago.
It's possible. Well, we'll find out as the season goes along. But speaking of Matt Cross, you want to lead into our last pick of the night?
Yeah, the final one, the stud power forward. And you could have gone with a whole bunch of dudes to fit into this trio. But I took Matt Cross, Keyshawn Hall, and Sean Bairstow. I'm pretty certain Bairstow is going to be the one who gets left off here. I do want to note very quickly, after him just playing some horrendous basketball when he first got back from the injury and that leading into those two losses that VCU had to start conference play, he now leads the league in assists since A-10 play has started, 5.3, which is pretty impressive, but I think the answer still just has to be big guard. Despite how well Matt Cross has played when he's been able to be on the court, Keyshawn Hall remains the great revelation of this season. He's holding George Mason up as they struggle to make threes basically from anyone at this point. He's still their offensive engine, one of the best rebounders in all of college basketball. He's still sitting second in the league for that metric on the season. And he and Amari Kelly are anchoring, as I mentioned before, one of the most consistent defensive groups in all of this league.
I think Keyshawn Hall is pretty obviously the number one answer. I don't know. I think Matt Cross is the clear number two, but I will just say, and it happened again against St. Joe's, there's been like four times this year where, like, usually UMass ends up on my laptop because it's not the main game I'm focused on, and I'll just turn my head and, like, Matt Cross is just on the ground holding his leg. Like, that guy just gets banged up, and that concerns me a little bit. Like, if he ends up missing any more time, UMass could be in trouble down the stretch. But I think what it comes down to for me, like, Bairstow leading the conference and assists is wild, but Cross is a pretty good passer himself, and I just think the rest of it, like scoring, rebounding, defense, I think is a big advantage toward Cross, so I think I'd have to go with him, assuming he can stay healthy.
Yeah, and quick correction here, Hall's second in rebounding since conference play started, because Maximus Edwards from his guard positions hauling down 9.5 a game over the last 3 weeks, but Hall is number one for the season long. And the one guy we could have thrown in is Philip Alston as well, who's gotten it into gear as of late, but it's kind of funny. We have this like big dividing line now at the two low post positions, where obviously center, we left out Deron Holmes from the conversation, but it's Holmes, Venning, Cohen, Quinn. then you drop off to St. Joe's and Loyola, who both have a really good pair at the spot, and then it's everybody else. Mm-hmm. Power forward's kind of the same. You got Hall, Cross, Bairstow, and Alston, and then you drop it down to I don't even know who the fifth team is at that point.
Yeah.
Like maybe Duquesne with the way that Williams is starting to play, him and Drame together as a combo. No, because Charles Pride's a three. So yeah, it's the Bonaventure combo of Asamvu and Evans, but there's no one else who has an individual who's anywhere near those top guys.
I feel like Nate Santos isn't like terribly behind. I mean, he's a tier below.
Yeah, but it's a distinct tier.
Yeah.
And Santos is, I would say, is pretty clearly the number five power forward.
I would agree with that.
But also hell, we don't even know who's backing him up on half the nights.
Zimmy time.
Well, yeah, if Podejimus ever comes back.
All right, well, I don't know how we're going to judge this, but I guess let us know who won the draft, or we'll figure it out at the end of the year somehow.
Let us know after the season who won the draft. Because if people let us know now, there's going to be like an angry Loyola fan that we didn't even include Philip Alston in it.
Yeah. Well, can't please everybody. Like Mike Corey said, there's 15 teams. We do our best.
Yeah, and quick aside, like, I did want to talk about this. I was going to put VCU in the perimeter trios argument. Are they just better than the other three?
What, the other three trios that we have?
Yeah, the Loyola, Mason, Dayton. Although I think when I was starting to think about this, I had Bairstow as part of that.
I mean, if Zeb Jackson's healthy, and well, the big question with that is Bamisil, like which version of him are we going to get? Because he's got 54 points over his last two games. And he had five the two before when it looked like he might get benched.
Well, that's just the Bamisil that exists.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he's even like somewhere in
between.
He's the most
hot and cold guy in the league.
Yeah. Like, if he doesn't have another 20-point game this season, then I would say, no, VCU isn't the best perimeter trio. But
yeah, but he's absolutely going to have another 20-point game this season. He'll probably have 2-4.
Yeah, I mean, he's been...
He'll also
ridiculous.
Definitely finish under five three more times.
Yeah. You just got to take what you can get with him.
Yeah, and Ryan Odom also just has the luxury that when it's clear that it's going to be one of those under five nights, he just stops playing them.
Yeah. Well, that's smart if you can call it out early. All right. Well, I just have one more question for you. And this was actually something that... happened in the first half of our conversation that was brought up. But after the LaSalle game, and I should preface this, like, I'm not an NBA draft guy. I don't really care. I don't follow it. But I just looked to see where Daron Holmes was after another dominating game. And the four drafts I looked at, one, he was not included, and three, he was in the like mid-50s. Am I missing something here? Because I feel like he's playing as well as he realistically could have been expected to this year, and he's dropped down the boards.
He's an older center.
Yeah.
So, like, Mike Corey said, could he be a first rounder? Like, I don't think that'll happen. Now, maybe he shows up at the combine and just blows everyone away, and he could sneak into like the low 20s. But the leagues continued to even change in the last 3 years, where if you put the Obi Toppin Player of the Year campaign in this season, he's not a lottery pick anymore.
Yeah.
But you want to take the comparison. Tamani Kamara gets drafted last year and is having a good season as a now already established NBA rotation player. The way that Daron Holmes is playing right now, he's just going to be a better player than Kamara, because he's already a better shooter. And he's not the same defensively. He's not a shutdown guy that you can put on multiple positions. But he's a good rim protector who can space the floor and do a little bit of playmaking. Like, that's exactly what you want from your center now.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just interesting. And, I mean, I get the argument, like, he is another year older, and that's probably all the incentive for him to go while he can this year. But... I mean, just statistically, he's up to number two in the KenPom Player of the Year ratings, way behind Zach Edey, but still, just individually, I feel like it has gotten talked about enough, but the games he's putting up in conference play are pretty ridiculous.
Let's let the rest of the season play out before we really have this discussion, but I'm starting to think he's just better than Obi. And this is going to sound sacrilegious to most Dayton fans, but part of what made the Obi season so special is because that team around him was so damn special. Yeah. And let's not get it wrong. That was the best year any A-10 players had in the last decade, probably. But what Holmes is doing is a whole further notch of ridiculous. Obi couldn't put the ball on the floor like this and just attack. And the one thing that we've always known is Holmes is a way better defender.
Mm-hmm.
But Obi was such a special offensive talent that that's what catches everyone's eye. Daron Holmes is a legitimate National Player of the Year candidate at this point. Well, yeah, theoretically, I think everyone might just give it to Zach Edey automatically because he won the narrative months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But there are going to be voters who turn their nose up at the fact that Purdue lost that Fairleigh Dickinson game and are not going to want to vote for him.
Yeah, Dayton did not lose a first-round tournament game last year, so there you go.
Yeah, they didn't even lose a first-round NIT game.
They haven't lost a first-round tournament game in years. What, we were sophomores in college. It's been a long time since Dayton lost a tournament
game. That was two Archie Miller jobs ago.
That's right.
All right, last question I want to pose to you right now. And we're recording this without knowing what happens in the Wednesday game, so this might change a little bit, but you have six teams that have kind of separated themselves into the bottom standings-wise here. Fordham, St. Bonaventure, Davidson, St. Louis, Duquesne, LaSalle. Somebody in that group's going to get going. They're going to kick it into gear, and come the end of the season, we're going to just feel like it was stupid that they were sitting in the pillow fight in mid-January anyway. Who is that team going to be? And by the way, someone has to jump up because Rhode Island still has to drop back down. Sorry, Rhodey fans.
Hey.
It was those three games were fun while they lasted before you got the tar beaten out of you twice.
Did Rhode Island have the worst week in A-10 history, losing by a combined, like, almost 70 points? I wonder if that's happened before. It has to have.
Well, and the fact that they just got eviscerated by Bonaventure, who then turned around and played two awful games after that. I thought that was Bonaventure just kind of turning it around to getting everything back together. And then they just could not score to save their life against Duquesne.
Yeah. Well, I guess so to answer your question, let's eliminate. It's not St. Louis. I kind of just think they're done. Tim Dolger just left the team. They already had a horrendous defense.
Yeah, it was always the year from hell. Now it's now they don't even have one of the few guys who can score off their bench.
We're just going to keep piling onto the Billikens. I don't think it's LaSalle.
It's not LaSalle.
They're just not talented enough.
They're going to get out of the basement. But, like, is there any chance that this team is any better than last year? Where I think we forget that they were a pillow fighter for a while, got hot in February, and then the perception got changed because they beat Duquesne in the A-10 tournament. And all of a sudden, they were hanging there in the quarterfinals.
I also think the perception changed just because, like, people like to root for LaSalle. Like, a lot of people hate St. Louis, and a lot of people get pissed at Fordham for how they drag down the conference. No one really hates LaSalle, though. I think that's a big part of it. But I'm going to eliminate Fordham, too, and Davidson. I don't know. Davidson's been disappointing. I don't think they're going to finish in the bottom three, but I don't see them getting out of the pillow fight, really, either. If we have to pick the two to elevate, it's St. Bonaventure and Duquesne, but I think I feel better about the Bonnies, as bipolar as they've been in conference play. Just say, I don't know, I picked them early in the season. I think talent-wise, they're pretty far ahead of the rest of these teams. But it is a concern the way their offense is playing. I kind of just want to trust that they're going to figure it out and continue the trend of getting better over the course of the season, but this has been a rare Schmidt season where that hasn't been the case, and they've kind of gotten worse in January.
And now the three-pointers are starting to slip. That was what was keying their offense all year long. They're sitting at ninth since conference play began. Big part of that being that Duquesne Rock fight where they didn't have Adams Woods, who I assume is back there next game. Absolutely yeah, we'll no see. One knows what's actually going on, but if I had to make an educated guess from conversations I had, I would say it's a lot more likely that he was suspended for that game than hurt.
Yeah, I'd also add for St. Bonaventure, and you could say the same about Duquesne, like I think part of the reason they're down here, like both have had really tough starts to their schedule. I mean, St. Bonaventure's played four away games, VCU, Richmond, George Mason, and Duquesne, so all tough places to play. Like the schedule's going to start evening out, and the same for Duquesne, who's already had to play Dayton and a couple other really tough schools.
So you can look at it two ways with Duquesne. One, you can look at the fact that they probably should have just lost the Bonaventure game. And their offense has just been disgustingly bad the last few games, ever since Grant went out. On the flip side, Grant sounds like should be back for the Fordham game on Saturday. And so maybe that gives them the life that they need, because they're by far the conference's worst offense since this has started. But at the same time, they're getting pummeled on the interior defensively. They're giving up a ton of free throws. And yet they're still one of the better defenses in the league in January. And they've played the six good center teams like I talked about. They've already faced Cohen, Holmes, Venning, and Quinn. They got pummeled by Asondico in the best game he's ever played. And then they had to deal with the Adelakun and Rubin combo. So they're getting rushed inside. They have not had any reprieve whatsoever. And now you start to look at their next few games where they're playing the Fordham centers who are physical, but not that offensively gifted. And then Rhode Island. And it's starting to get a little bit easier for them. The Clark-Brozier combo has been as spectacular as ever defensively. If they can get Grant back and he can start to shoot more like, well, basically just not the Day-Day Grant that we saw, who was really bad from deep in December, then they do have a chance to get themselves back to life these next few games. But yeah, I'd still go with the Bonnies. And partially because they still have more weapons that I trust.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's still a surprisingly deep team that I don't think we expected, and feels like with all those options, they can figure something out at some point.
But yeah, one of those two, like, their fans have been real down the last few weeks. One of those two is going to figure out enough to at least get themselves to, like, a 7 seed.
So if there's anyone then, like, if we're just saying Rhode Island is in big trouble and expect them to fall into the bottom six, is there anyone else who's sitting above that mark right now that you're most concerned about? Or will we have St. Bonaventure or Duquesne in the pillow fight?
I'm concerned about how poorly UMass has played at the end of some of these games. But I don't think it's going to happen, but it's definitely something that would be on my mind.
Yeah, they've let some get away, but just, they've played every game except for, weirdly, the Rhode Island game, which was, I think, the first one without Cross. Every other game's been super competitive, so I'm not too concerned. I mean, GW is just so up and down. Like, they got destroyed by UMass recently, so I don't kind of feel like they're just going to win enough games to go 9-9, and maybe that'll be good enough. But I don't know. Still a long way to go. It's going to be really close in that part of the standings.
All right, my last question before we wrap this up. I wanted to bring this up on the pod. I ended up just monologuing it last week because I thought Loyola was going to lose to UMass, and I didn't know what I was going to talk about for that half of the pod if that happened. And so I started really going deep into my you have to get a double bye this year hot take. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
What, to win the tournament?
Yeah, I think the general idea is because there's no clear, like, second, third team right now, it doesn't really matter. I think the parity just makes it of critical importance that you play the least number of games that you can.
I don't know if it really matters this year. I mean, we've seen a couple recent champions win four games. Nobody's winning five from the pillow fight, but I still think there's like six or seven teams that are going to be in the mix. I wouldn't. And I think the gap right now, too, like Richmond's standing out right now with their undefeated record, and we'll see if that remains at the end of this, but they stand out. But like the gap between two and seven is pretty small this year, I would say. So, no, I actually think this year in particular, it doesn't matter as much getting that double bye.
I think I'm going to live alone on this island, but I am headstrong on this one. But I do want to wrap it up with this. We probably should have just made Richmond the focus of this episode. We'll see what happens when they play Dayton on Saturday.
Yeah.
But people kind of make the joke, the 2020 parallels of Dayton has the same record right now that they did in that season. There's one other 2020 parallel that's starting to emerge, and that is that in mid-January at that point, we weren't talking about Richmond making the NCAA tournament at all. They were just a glimmer off in the distance. And I went back and looked, and they had a slightly better non-conference that season. Their at-large hopes are alive. Like, it's something that could happen if they just keep racking up wins. They have no bad losses this season. But history has told us you have to win a quad one game. And they could get a second somewhere here, especially if George Mason starts to play really well. They're teetering on the edge of that game in Fairfax at the end of the season being a Q1 game. But right now, it is just the Dayton game.
Mm-hmm.
And if Richmond wins that, this starts to become a very realistic possibility. And if they lose, it's probably more or less dead, save for some unbelievable hot streak. But we could be back here next week starting to tease the idea that Richmond could actually get themselves there.
It's possible if they hold on to the GW game tonight, which they're losing at the time of this statement. Yeah, the Richmond-Dayton game could be the most important of the A-10 season, at least in terms of NCAA tournament implications.
Also, let's keep the 2020 parallels going. That season, the only meeting between the eventual top two teams in the league was the final Saturday of January in the Robins Center, 6 p.m. Eastern. Exact same as this one.
Richmond plays a lot of 6 p.m. games. Have you noticed that? It just seems like they're... Maybe that's just
It's a lot. No, it's actually true. We get a lot of Saturday evening Spider TV.
Yeah.
Although this one's actually on CBSSN.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer because that's one of the better ESPN Plus broadcasts. But
yeah.
But I digress. Also, I don't even want to shout out the guy, but on almost exactly the 1 year anniversary of the DoorDash guy getting on the court at Duquesne, I witnessed a St. Bonaventure fan get ejected twice last night.
Wait, the same fan?
They threw him out, and then I don't know if they didn't escort him all the way out of the arena and he snuck back in, or they just took him out of his section, but then he got tossed again.
Wow.
Ripped his shirt in half, started flipping off the student section at one point.
That's flagrant too.
He was wearing like six gold chains. Like he was dressed like J-Rock from Trailer Park Boys, if anyone gets that reference. Like he basically looked like the SoundCloud rapper that everyone went to high school with. But yeah, this guy was up. He was the most energetic fan in the whole building. Got thrown out twice. A hell of an accomplishment for him.
That's a long trip back to Allegheny after that game. That's rough.
Yeah, and on a Tuesday night too. I hope that guy got home safe.
I'm sure you'll see him next year at the game.
Yeah, unless they put his picture on the wall, but we'll see. May or may not have been banned for life from the UPMC Cooper Fieldhouse. Hopefully not. That guy had some great energy. Seemed like he might have been obnoxious to sit by, but from the opposite end of the court, he seemed like a good time. So I want to end it on that note. Another thank you to Mike Corey for joining us. Thank you to everyone for listening. Be sure to subscribe. Leave us a rating on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter. You know the whole spiel. We'll be back next week. We'll see. The craziness is starting to thin out. I feel like we're starting to get a grasp of how good some of these teams truly are. But by the end of this weekend, that might look incredibly stupid. We shall see. I'm sure we'll be talking about it. Be sure to come back and listen then. Yeah.